88.3 Southern FM, local and live.
And now on the Space Show, we turn our attention to the Kármán Project. The Kármán Project is an effort to set the groundwork for strategic discussions on the future of space cooperation for positive effect. It aims to remind everybody that space is fundamental to the human experience and that achieving true global cooperation can position space as an equalizer for humanity. We're going to hear now the opinions of Catherine Bennell, who at the time this was recorded was Capability, Robotics and Automation person at the Australian Space Agency in Adelaide. And she began by discussing the Australian Aboriginal view of the sky.
For thousands of years, Indigenous Australians made sense of the land by looking to the sky. The dreaming is what they call the time when life was created according to their culture. And there's a strong link between space and Australia's Indigenous people, who are essentially, you know, the world's oldest astronomers. And for thousands of years, the sky was for them how they made sense of the world, but also how they made sense of day-to-day life. It dictated seasonal activities around food and movement. It was a reflection of what's happening on the land. They had constellations that let them know the best time to look for emu eggs, for example. And today, you know, we continue to look from Earth to space, but we now can also look from space to Earth. And I think that really affects how we dream day to day, that perspective of looking both up but looking both down, the intersection of space explorer and Earth explorer, and how we can really believe that we can make those dreams real. And today, I mean, we're no longer in the Apollo era. Space is accessible to so many more people, more organizations, more countries. School kids today can apply to put their payloads on the International Space Station, and anyone can afford to put something up there for the cost of, you know, a private school fee, which is not accessible to many, but it's accessible to a lot more than just a few government programs around the world like it used to be. I think most of humankind are looking to address the same big philosophical questions. They're looking to address, why are we here? Where did we come from? How did the world or the universe begin? And they're very, very big questions that may or may not ever be able to be answered concretely. But those questions break down into smaller questions, and those questions break down into smaller questions that we can start to look at addressing. And some of those can be addressed by space. For example, the Moon and the Mars can tell us a lot about how the solar system formed, how the Earth formed, how life might have come to exist on the planet Earth. And so space can help mankind to understand its place in the world, both factually but also philosophically. Well, that's a really good question. What's a dream? And it comes to your question, I guess, of can we make sense of the world without dreams? I have something I could say about Aboriginal culture here, if that's interesting for the documentary and how that relates to it. Basically, for thousands of years, Indigenous Australians made sense of the land by looking to the sky. The dreaming is what they call the time when life was created according to their culture. And there's a strong link between space and Australia's Indigenous people, who are essentially, you know, the world's oldest astronomers. And for thousands of years, the sky was for them how they made sense of the world, but also how they made sense of day-to-day life. It dictated seasonal activities around food and movement. It was a reflection of what's happening on the land. They had constellations that let them know the best time to look for emu eggs, for example. And today, you know, we continue to look from Earth to space, but we now can also look from space to Earth. And I think that really affects how we dream day to day, that perspective of looking both up but looking both down, the intersection of space explorer and Earth explorer, and how we can really believe that we can make those dreams real. I'm a space explorer, without a doubt. The Earth observation is interesting for me, but it's not the reason for why. I think it comes down to the spirit of discovery that, you know, in its most literal sense, often feels like proving new ground, which is about exploration. space exploration for me is exploration outside of yourself. And I think the Earth observation is almost like the exploration within. And there's a poem by Keats that I was first introduced to when I went to a presentation as a student by a space professional in the industry, and it really spoke to me. It's called On First Looking into Chapman's Homer. And part of it goes, "Then I felt like some watcher of the skies when a new planet swims into his ken, or like stout Cortez when with eagle eyes he stared at the Pacific and all his men looked at each other with a wild surmise, silent upon a peak in Darien." And that poem is about the feeling of being struck silent by the emotion and the awe of discovering something new. And that is the compulsion to explore for me. And I think it probably is for a few other people too. It's hard to explain, but it's sort of a driving force that helps motivate you in what you do, from everything like the day-to-day grind to the bigger projects. I mean, space is wonderful in that for many of us that are in there, it feels like we're working towards kind of a higher purpose of discovery and creating tangible new knowledge. And I think a lot of us are motivated by that discovery when we first start. And then we also get captivated by the how do you build something to go there, which comes into the technology innovation. But in reality, it's not really greatly different in the day-to-day per se than any other kind of high technology industry or complex form of engineering or science. It's just how it's applied and the culture and the framework in which it's applied. But for me, I did it personally through never letting go of the dream of, you know, contributing to space and human knowledge through space, and through putting in the effort to get there, which was many years of study and much effort at work and thinking creatively and putting in my all to do it.
The views of Catherine Bennell, who at the time this was recorded in 2021 was the leader of the Capability, Robotics and Automation section of the Australian Space Agency in Adelaide. Since then, she has been to Europe and trained as an astronaut and is now very much involved in inspiring school children and others in the what can be done in space. And she was speaking for the Kármán Project. Someone else who spoke for the Kármán Project is William Gerstenmaier, who at the time of this in 2021 was Vice President of Mission Assurance at SpaceX. Of course, he had quite a long career with NASA before that. And he was asked about how Sputnik 1 sparked an interest in space.
Yeah, I would say probably the, you know, if I think back what my passion for space is and where my interest in space came from, is I think it started when I was a very small child. I was maybe 2 or 3 years old, and I remember being taken out in the backyard by my parents and we watched Sputnik fly overhead. It was amazing to me as a small child. I couldn't quite understand exactly what was going on. First of all, it was late at night. I'm outside, it's cold, and all the neighbors are around and we're watching this little white dot fly across the sky. So that was probably my first memory of anything in space. And from that, I kind of recognized that, hey, space is special, and it brings out and brings us all together in a unique way. Just as I saw all the neighbors come out in the backyard to go watch this little object fly overhead. And that told me that, hey, there's something special about this industry that pulls us all together and makes us think about bigger things, bigger than ourselves and bigger than just our neighborhood. So I think that was really probably my first introduction to space and space flight activities.
And William Gerstenmaier there, just a point to note that most people who think they saw Sputnik 1 probably didn't. A much brighter object was the carrier rocket that placed Sputnik 1 into orbit. So the brightest object was the carrier rocket, then Sputnik 1, and there was a nose cone, which is very, very faint and hard to see. So most likely he saw the carrier rocket. But anyway, it was still the first object in space. Now, Another question asked by the project, the Kármán project, was, did you follow the Apollo lunar missions?
Yeah, I followed the Apollo program as a child and as a kid. I built models of the Apollo spacecraft. I followed things. It turned out for the actual moon landing, I was actually at a camp. I was actually camping with the Boy Scouts in the U.S. So we didn't have access to a television. So we had a radio, and we were in the middle of nowhere, and we kind of listened remotely to the landing. But I didn't really get to see the landing, and I didn't really get to hear it in the way that most folks have. So, but I think I followed the Apollo program all the way along and looked at the rocket developments and other activities that were going on. But it wasn't something that I followed extremely close, but it was something that I was interested in, and it kind of just, again, I was kind of compelled a little bit to be in the industry, but I was more compelled to just understand the engineering and I would say the aeronautics and flight dynamics kind of things, more than the specific of following the actual mission.
And William was asked how he experienced the first picture of planet Earth taken in 1968 by the crew of Apollo 8.
When you see the little blue planet of the Earth, and then you can see that really thin blue atmosphere, and that's the atmosphere that we all live in. And I think that really started the whole environmental movement, because I think it became obvious to all of us on the Earth that, hey, this is a closed system, and moving out into space changes our perspective and makes us realize that we're really a pretty small planet and we really need to take care of the planet. I think one of the Apollo astronauts said, you know, we went all the way to the moon to learn more about the Earth. And I think that's really true. I think even as you travel and explore, it gives you a different perspective that makes you makes you realize how important it is to take care of the things that you have. So it's, you know, I think another thing that always resonates with me is I got a chance to work with all the greats from Apollo, with, you know, Gene Kranz and all the heroes you see on the movies. Those were my bosses when I was in Houston. I got to work with them hand in hand, and they used to say that they were ordinary people doing extraordinary things. And that really sticks with me today. I consider myself an ordinary person that has been blessed. I've been given these huge challenges to go do, and I'm able to do these extraordinary things, but there's nothing special about me. I'm just like any other human here on the Earth. I just have the privilege of working on these tremendously difficult problems with an amazing team. And that's the challenge. That's the thing that motivates me and keeps me moving forward. So I think maybe if everyone can find that in their life, it may not be in space, but if you could find something you're passionate about and you can pursue that dream, find some others that enjoy that same dream and learn to work together, I think it's an amazing experience, and I've been truly blessed throughout my career. Yeah, I would say throughout my career, I've had the chance to work with many, many astronauts. And I think, you know, if you don't work with them, maybe you see them more as kind of like a hero or in an ideal sense. But when you work daily with the astronauts, like I did in Houston, you get to know them kind of as friends, and you get to know them personally. You also get to know them outside of work. You know, I'll go to church with them. Their kids would go to school with my kids. They were, you know, neighbors in the neighborhood. They were friends. So I came to know astronauts as very talented, very gifted, very smart people, but also as just normal human beings that kind of do everything like we all do, you know, go to the grocery store and have mow the yard and do the typical things that we all do. So I had a very unique aspect of getting to know astronauts as, you know, seeing how the public saw them maybe as heroes and doing amazing things. But then I also got to know them personally as friends and neighbors and colleagues, essentially in the work environment. So it was a tremendous privilege to get to know astronauts in a different way. So they were not just the hero or the ideal person. It's someone that I really knew and I could really relate to. And that bond between myself as an engineer and them as an astronaut was extremely strong. You know, when they would go to flight, you know, my job was to make sure everything in the rocket was as safe as it could be. Everything was done as well as it could be. They were trained as well as they could be to go do this tough mission that they were ready to go do. And we kind of did these adventures, these challenges as a team. And so there was a true, really deep, deep sense of teamwork between the astronaut corps, the astronaut office, and us on the ground as engineers. I think it's also neat when I talk to astronauts and they describe home. You know, when they used to land on the Soyuz, they would land in Russia and Kazakhstan, and they would say they're home. And I thought, well, wait a minute, you're not really home. You're in Kazakhstan. Home is somewhere in the United States. But they came to recognize the planet as home, and it wasn't there. So then I think as we move out into space, we need to change that definition of home. It'll be really neat when you return from some large destination beyond the Earth-Moon system and you get back now and you're in orbit around the Earth or you're in orbit around the Moon, and that is now home. When we start defining home as the Earth-Moon system instead of, you know, our neighborhood or our house, then we've really expanded the way we think of the world. And that's something neat that I think spaceflight and putting humans in space allows us to do. It changes our impression and how we think about ourselves. You know, we're not the big center of the universe. We're this small little person on this tiny little rock in this huge space continuum. And space gives us that perspective. And putting humans and astronauts and talking to them, all this lets us get that real sense of what it's like to be a human here on this spaceship called Earth.
For the Kármán Project, that's the views of William Gerstenmayer, who at the time of speaking was Vice President of Mission Assurance at SpaceX after a long career at NASA. The reaction of the science community to the news that Elon Musk intended to launch his red Tesla Roadster into heliocentric orbit was raised with William.
Yeah, it was pretty interesting. I was at NASA at the time. And so I think we heard that he was going to launch the Roadster to space, and the science mission directorate, they were kind of upset because, you know, they wanted to have like a scientific instrument on the rocket, or at least have some payload weight on there, something that made sense. They didn't want to have a car with essentially a mannequin in it. So they were worried that it was going to contaminate space. So then they asked me to reach out to SpaceX and find out what was going on. So I reached out to SpaceX, and lo and behold, they had done all the analysis to show that the car would be okay and it wouldn't blow up and the paint wouldn't come off, and all this was done correctly. So they did all the engineering to make sure that this demonstration would work well. But I think it was hard for the scientists because they were so kind of stuck in their scientific world that they wanted to see a research instrument fly potentially and not see this kind of a car with a mannequin fly. But I think the human side of us, right, needs that other side, right, where you can see now a vision that's different, right? So I think there's a time for the scientific research, there's a time for the analysis, there's time for the formal study, but then there's also a time for us to just kind of be a little more carefree and dream and create a perspective that others not in the science industry, not in the engineering industry can relate to. And it creates a vision of what we're trying to do. So if you wanted to create a vision of what it's like to be a multi-planetary species, that's the vision. You get in your car and you drive to space. So it's a simple metaphor that can be picked up by humans on the Earth and normal people, and it doesn't resonate with the scientists. But I think it's fun to get a chance to step back and see both sides of the argument, to see the scientists be grumpy about, well, wait a minute, this isn't the way we've always done it. But then to see other normal citizens get excited because they can now see how space becomes something they can use. So I think that taught me a lesson to think about these things in different ways and essentially celebrate diversity and different ways of doing business, and don't always do it the same way. Even though it doesn't quite make sense, if it feels right, experiment a little bit and see and learn. And then you'll be surprised what the outcome may be. So if you wanted to create a vision of what it's like to be a multi-planetary species, that's the vision. You get in your car and you drive to space. So it's a simple metaphor that can be picked up by humans on the Earth and normal people, and it doesn't resonate with the scientists. But I think it's fun to get a chance to step back and see both sides of the argument, to see the scientists be grumpy about, well, wait a minute, this isn't the way we've always done it. But then to see other normal citizens get excited because they can now see how space becomes something they can use.
88.3 Southern FM, the sounds of the Bayside.
The Space Show, which is sharing with you the views of William Gerstenmayer, the Vice President of Mission Assurance at SpaceX, about the Kármán project. Now, this next bit, Elon Musk, of course, is well known to William Gerstenmayer, and how Elon Musk articulates human aspirations was the topic.
You talk about Elon Musk's dreams. I think they're really kind of all of our dreams, right? I think he articulates, maybe for us that are the explorers and the dreamers, an idea of what we would like to do. And I think because of that, he kind of pulls us together and pulls teams together that can figure out ways to go do these amazing and challenging things. And I think that's what I really like about our industry is that like we discussed earlier, you asked me what problems and questions that I wanted answers. I don't know some of them, but I really want to kind of just push out into the unknown and then discover more questions that need answers and continue to move. So it's really this exploring thing. How do we go beyond ourselves and learn to explore and to reach out and work together? So I think those visions are very accomplishable in our, you know, maybe not our lifetimes, but it may take multiple lifetimes. But I think it's important for us as a species to have those dreams, to be trying new things, you know, pushing out into the solar system and learning and discovering. And I think it actually helps us be better humans as we do that.
One of the difficult things that Gerstenmayer had to do while working at NASA was sign off on the risk of flying the space shuttle again. And he discussed the family reactions of two astronauts flying in space after the accident. And he was just speaking just after the 35th anniversary of the STS-51L tragedy.
Well, it depends. I can give you a couple examples of what it's like on the day. When one of the astronauts from the U.S. was over in Russia getting ready to fly, he was getting ready to fly the next morning. And I think that night his family was there and we were all staying in a hotel in Kazakhstan. And we went outside and we looked in the sky and we saw a space station fly overhead. And I remember his kids looking at that little white dot, and I told them that your dad's going to go live on that space station for about 6 months. And then they kind of looked at me, and they looked at the little white dot, and they said, "Are you sure?" And I said, "Yep, that's what he's going to go do." And then it was kind of neat because then it wasn't just they got to see where their dad was going to go, and then they got to kind of comprehend that, and then I got to see their reaction. So that was a very special moment for me to see the family get excited about what their dad was going to do. And then the other thing that I thought was humorous, too, was they kind of know their dad, and they know he's not perfect, and they go, "Are you sure he's good enough to go do this?" And I said, "Oh, yeah, he's good enough to go do this." But that's kind of the real – I mean, it's not the Hollywood movie kind of fancy stuff. It's more the human kind of how we just talk as humans back and forth. And it's a big deal. I mean, this is, you know, essentially when I as an engineer signed a piece of paper that says the rocket is ready to go fly, I'm essentially signing a piece of paper that says we've done everything on the ground possible to take care of that person that's going to go fly. And that's an unbelievable responsibility, and there is no more intense job in the world than you signing up someone entrusting their life to you and the team that you work with their life to go fly. And we know it's a very dangerous and risky environment. You know, I was in the program for the Challenger loss, which occurred last week, and then also the Columbia loss on February 1st. And those were friends I lost on those vehicles, and it really hurt. And I don't know, you know, that's the downside of our business, right? That there's a risk, and the risk is real. I felt that risk. I've seen the crews that were my friends lost. I felt like I failed in my job for those activities. But somehow you have to dust yourself off from those tough times and keep flying and keep moving forward. So you need to recognize the benefit of what we're doing and recognize that the crews knew the risks and they're willing to take that risk to move forward. And that's not an easy thing to do. I would tell you again, I reflected this week on the Challenger loss, and about 20 years ago, this is the 35th anniversary of the Challenger loss, and June Scobie Rogers was Dick Scobie's wife, and I knew him extremely well. He was a commander of the Challenger, and we had to do an event in Florida, an anniversary event on the 20th anniversary, and she spoke first. And when she spoke, she talked about her husband knowing the risk, and she talked about the need that he felt to expand the soul and the spirit of the human race by going to space. And he knew the risk. And then she, in her own words, said that the greatest risk is if we don't take risk. And those words stick with me today, that she recognized what we're doing has huge risks, but it's even a larger risk if we don't take those risks and move forward and push the boundaries. And that's what we're doing. And what's amazing for me was here she lost her husband, and she had no remorse about what happened. She had no no animosity towards the space agency, which I represented. And in fact, she created the Challenger Center, and she's teaching young kids about spaceflight and getting them excited and interested in space. So here she lost her husband, but yet in his memory, and the goal to push and explore into space was so strong in her heart and her husband's heart that she's dedicated her life to honor her husband by teaching the next generation and getting them excited about going into space. So when I see her doing that, I can't think of anything better for me to do than to keep figuring out how to keep pushing the envelope, to keep pushing hard, to keep driving in ways that seem impossible, and explain the risk to the astronauts, explain the risk to my teams, but don't shy away from that risk. Face that risk knowing that we're going to learn, and what we're going to learn is important, and that learning will be more important than the risk we're about ready to go take. And that's what we do for every launch and every flight when we put crews on board spacecraft to go fly to space. Yeah, as I think about the design and building of the space station, and how it came about is a place where astronauts could go to work and do research. You know, I think about even the shuttle program kind of as it started, right? The shuttle program was a vehicle that was more than just a spacecraft. It wasn't a vehicle just to take you to space and then return from space. It was actually a construction platform. You know, it carried with it an airlock. It carried a payload bay. It carried an arm, like a robotic arm, like a crane that could actually build things. So when I was, kind of began my career, I used to have a poster in college, and it said going to work in space, and it had a picture of the space shuttle. So what I think the space shuttle did for us is it showed that we as a species could actually build something as amazing as a space station in space. And then that kind of became a home for astronauts. And you know, there's seven astronauts up there now. Again, they're from around the world, and they're there. They've been there for over 20 years. There's been someone off the planet for 20 years. So we're starting a new phase where we're not just living here on the planet, but a portion of us can live in space. And it's neat to be part of the team that helped build that large facility, that large international facility that houses the astronauts and becomes their home. So I wanted to find a job where I'm accountable for the decisions I make. I'm accountable for the things and recommendations I do. So I get that feedback of what's happening. I don't like just providing advice and then letting somebody else implement it. I would much rather have ownership in the results. So then I applied to a bunch of different companies. SpaceX was one of them. And I think the neat thing is my wife knows me extremely well. And she goes, you're going to go to SpaceX because they're doing human spaceflight. So the other companies were doing spaceflight, but they weren't doing human spaceflight. And she knows that there's something about the human spaceflight side that really gets me excited. So this was my opportunity to essentially leave NASA and go to SpaceX and now still get to work on human spaceflight. So if you think about it in the big picture scheme of things, it's pretty amazing. I described to you earlier, I was in the back room on console for the first space shuttle flight. So that was the first cruise that left the US and went to space. And then fast forward 30 some plus years. Now I'm in the back room at SpaceX again as an engineer watching the first cruise fly off the Earth on a Dragon capsule to space station. So again, here I get a chance to see this twice in my career. I get to be there for the first flight of humans on a new vehicle. So if I think back on my career, I'm unbelievably blessed that I got to do both of these kind of firsts, to see humans fly on a brand new spacecraft for the first time. And pretty amazing in one career to see that. I would have never planned that. I would have never predicted that, but somehow it all worked out and I got to do both of those aspects. So I consider myself just extremely blessed and extremely lucky to be able to do that throughout my career.
Speaking in 2021 for the Kármán Project, that was William Gerstenmayer, who at that time was Vice President of Mission Assurance at SpaceX. Well, more about the Kármán Project. Pratip Basu is the co-founder and chief executive officer of SatSure. And he was giving a response to the question, does space drive global collaboration?
No one imagined that Russia and or former USSR and the US would ever collaborate. And bam, you had the International Space Station, right? So I believe space brings people together because it reminds that there is only one Earth, and it creates a platform for such effective global collaboration, because the motive of people coming together working in space is much higher than the geopolitics on Earth. It goes around the continuity of humanity, the sheer existence of humanity itself is such a puzzle that people, you know, when they come together, they are more of explorers trying to identify the next biggest problems rather than get involved in the pettiness of humankind.
Thomas Pesquet was an astronaut with the European Space Agency. He's a Frenchman, and he has been to space twice, and he explains how to cope if things go wrong.
The moment you selected as an astronaut, you pretty much have in the back of your head, whether you're aware of it or now, you have a list of things that can go wrong. Because if you look at it, like everything, the probabilities are against you. Everything is against you because it's extremely difficult to go to space. So really, you need a series of small miracles to end up in space. So there's this, and then, you know, the station needs to be still working properly, so nobody should break anything. The station shouldn't be in a bad shape. You know, the countries still need to cooperate, because otherwise the ISS project is over. Your health, your everything. So you constantly build a list of things that could go wrong, but also because it's your job. Because I think a job of an astronaut is mostly to adapt to a situation, and if something goes wrong, to fix it.
That was Thomas Pesquet, European Space Agency astronaut. Karen Hischke is a board member of Janus Social Business Investor.
If you think about industrialized countries, we know that connectivity, you basically put fibers in the ground. That's how you get your connectivity, your internet and everything. But if you think Amazon, or you think about, you know, basically patches in Africa, which are really, really remote, if you want to get connectivity there, it really can only come from satellites. It has to come from space. But how important is it for rural areas to really be connected? I think the last 12 months have totally shown this. If you think about this COVID pandemic where people are sitting at home, the ones who do not have access to information, to education, to remote healthcare, they are lost. I mean, they're just stuck. And that's really how important it is, and how social impact can really be achieved by just improving this level of connectivity and then really making good use of it.
On the Space Show, we have been hearing the views of various people in relation to the Karman project. Those were recorded in 2021. This has been the Space Show, and it's presented by members of the Space Association of Australia. And space.southernfm.com.au is our website. So why not go to there? Richard, I think you've got a bit of Vangelis ready for us. Thank you, Richard.